This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, how we doing?
Are we enjoying spring training? Are we having a damn good time? Welcome to a new edition of Rico Bronya. David Stearns, the team president, the general manager, whatever you want to call him, the czar of the New York Mets, met the media on Wednesday, a couple days ago, because Pete Alonso's deal was official. He needed to pass his physical. He did, and officially inked his name to the two-year contract, really a one-year contract, as Pete returns as a member of the New York Mets. So David Stearns had a chance to talk about that and a few other things. And we did this with Carlos Mendoza the other day. If you missed it, go into the archives. You can download it. We listened to basically everything Mendy said over the first 2 days of spring training and then gave you kind of instant reaction to everything he said. We're going to play that same game with David Stearns. So if you haven't heard what David had to say, this is your chance to hear it. If you've already heard what David had to say, don't worry. Keep listening because we're going to respond to a lot of what David Stearns has to say. So, ladies and gentlemen, the president of the New York Mets, the man from Milwaukee, David Stearns.
Obviously, the Alonso negotiation took a while. In your opinion, what was it at the end that finally got it to cross the finish line?
Look, I think both parties want to get it done. And that's a really good foundation for a deal. We're thrilled to have Pete back. I think, Pete is thrilled to be back. He was here briefly the other day for his physical. You could see the genuine excitement, that he had to be back in this building. And we're really happy we were able to make it happen.
I hope that answer calms some of the Met fans who are worried that Pete Alonso's mad, that Pete Alonso's bitter, that he comes to Met camp angry. David Stearns told you he's pumped up and he's excited. So hopefully that quells some of those fears.
There's been a lot of talk about the meeting you guys had in Tampa with Steve and Scott and Pete and yourself. What was the key message that you as an organization wanted to get across to him in that meeting?
I think we just want to ensure that he knew we wanted him back. And I think he wanted to express the same to us. I think he wanted to express his desire to come back. And it was important, I think, for both sides to hear that. These are long negotiations. There's a lot of back and forth. And if you're going to make a deal, I think it's important for both sides to really feel and hear that both sides are very invested in the deal.
I could see how that would be very important. If you're Pete Alonso and you're not involved in the negotiations, but you're hearing what's reported, you're hearing what Scott Boras is telling you, there comes a point where you start to say, they don't want me back. So that face-to-face down in Tampa, that legendary meeting, really turned out to be important, even if it was just simply to look into a man's eyes and say, I want you back.
Why do you think... if not
those wires got crossed, why do you think there was maybe an uncertainty from either side that, you know, this was a marriage that you both wanted to happen?
Look, it's a long negotiation, and I think you never really know how free agent processes are going to play out. And so Pete had earned the right to evaluate different opportunities. We were certainly active in the free agent market this year in a variety of different ways. And so ultimately, I think both sides felt like this was the right resolution, and we're certainly really happy we got there.
Yeah, well, we're really happy you got there, because imagining this team without Pete Alonso in the lineup, I don't think Francisco Alvarez is saying we have the best lineup in baseball if you don't bring back Pete Alonso.
Around the time that you guys signed Winker, and I think Minter was around that same time, did you think at that time that Pete was still going to be a Met? Like, how realistic was it in your mind?
I didn't know. I at that point in time, I would have said that there was a very real possibility that he was going to end up elsewhere. But ultimately, you know, we're thrilled that we were able to continue discussions and get a deal done.
If you think back to the reporting around that, the reporting around the Mets signing Jesse Winker was instantly they're expecting Pete to sign elsewhere. They were never closing the door on it. That was my initial reaction when that story broke. And I think I was going on the air with Tiki before we even did a Rico. It was, listen to what they're saying. They're expecting him to leave, but they're not closing the door on it, because it never made sense that signing Jesse Winker or signing AJ Minter would truly close the door. Yes, it meant they were spending money. And yes, it meant Steve Cohen was going to have to make a decision. Am I willing to spend even more money? But it was never fully closing the door. So the reporting is kind of accurate, because David Stearns even says, yeah, I thought it was a real possibility he was gone. Not by the Mets choosing it and saying you're done, but by Pete finally saying, ah, screw it, I got a good offer from Toronto, I'm going to go there. So it does feel like the reporting around that time is checked out.
David, what did you make of the way the market overall valued Pete Alonso?
I don't really make much of it. I think, you know, free agency can be kind of a weird thing, and players can be valued differently by the market in free agency at different points in the same offseason. Certainly valued differently by the market in different off seasons. So this is kind of where it landed. And we're really pleased to be able to bring him back.
Yeah. I mean, what do you want David to say? Yeah, the market was crap for him, and we reap the benefits. I think that you don't want to spike the football. The Mets essentially won this negotiation. So you don't make much of the market if you're David Stearns, because you don't want to say, yeah, we told you. We told Pico find a better offer, and he was unable to get one.
Well, acknowledging that the roster is always evolving over the course of the full season, do you expect that you're pretty much done off-season work-wise as far as key additions, major additions?
I think so. Look, we're always going to be involved in conversations. We're always going to be trying to see if there are ways we can get better. We also feel really good about the group we have that's reporting right now. And I would anticipate, by and large, this is the team we're going forward with.
So here's what I take out of that, right? They're done in terms of free agents. They're done in terms of obvious moves. Like, this is the roster. But let's take Michael King and Dylan Cease, because that's kind of a name still on people's minds. Will the Padres trade Dylan Cease? They just signed Nick Pivetta. And think about what they gave Nick Pivetta. Forget about the money. Forget about the contract. Forget about the opt-outs. They gave up a draft pick to sign Nick Pivetta. Okay? They gave up a draft pick, which I wouldn't have done. But okay, Padres did that. You see a move like that and you wonder, oh, are they setting themselves up to then trade Dylan Cease while remaining competitive? Because that's what the Padres are trying to do. That's what they did last year when they traded Juan Soto to the Yankees. They were trying to remain competitive. Maybe they are going to trade Dylan Cease. I honestly have no idea. I don't know if they're going to do it before the start of the season. My opinion on going after Dylan Cease, I've said over and over, I'll say it again in case you missed it, I'd love to have him on the team. He'd make the Met rotation better. He's a very reliable arm, and this rotation could use reliability. With that said, do I want to give up top prospects for a guy who's a free agent at the end of the year? and the team president's already shown he doesn't love giving out long-term contracts to guys in their 30s? The answer is no. I'd love him on the team, but at the right cost. So we'll keep an eye on that. I think that answer from David Stearns tells you, sure, I'll be on the phone with the Padres and AJ Preller. I wouldn't bank on it. I wouldn't expect that this is likely the Met roster, but ears are always open. And I think the Mets' ears would be open to adding another starting pitcher, preferably a guy that's either a frontline starter or a guy that gives you the reliability the way Dylan Cease does, and certainly the way even Luis Castillo does.
David, why ultimately was short-term the right arrangement for the Pete Alonso deal?
I think for both sides, just given how we were looking at it, how Pete was looking at it, you know, each side's going to have different objectives. And clearly the length of contract is one objective. AAV is another objective. And you try different structures on either side. And this was the combination of AAV structure and length that overlap for both sides. And I think it works well for both sides.
Yeah, so let's explain that. We didn't want to give him a long-term contract. He wanted a lot of money, so we met in the middle. We got the short-term deal. He got the high AIV, and that's how we thought this was best for everybody.
David, there's a perception, fair or not, that you personally didn't want Pete back, but Steve pushed hard for it. Why did David Stearns think Pete should be back here as the Mets' first baseman?
Yeah, he makes us a better team. I mean, there's no question he makes us a better team. We're in a spot where we feel like we've got a really good team. We're trying to win as many games as possible. Pete makes us better.
As far as that position, I mean, Pete's kind of become, an anomaly a little bit because teams kind of shift guys in and out of there. Are you comfortable with having kind of that traditional slugger type in there?
With a player who produces at the level that Pete produces? Absolutely.
Thank you, David Stearns, for saying the obvious thing, for saying the thing that I think I screamed into a microphone over and over and over again for months. And I've always thought it was obvious. I didn't think it was something I needed to convince anybody of. The Mets are better with Pete Alonso. The New York Mets are a better team with Pete Alonso. Now, David did not directly answer the, hey, there's a perception you didn't want him. He didn't come out and say, well, that's a lie. Just because Joe B thinks that doesn't mean it's true. So that idea still lives because he didn't deny it. But yes, he makes them better. That was always the reason why once we got off of the 6-year contracts and this became a short-term deal, that's why it was always a no-brainer to bring him back. Any idea of not bringing him back never made sense. He makes them better. And David Stearns was very blunt in answering it that way because it's true. Mets are a better team because Pete Alonso's in the lineup.
Dave, I think about 2 weeks before it got done, you guys were at Amazing Day at the Fan Fest, and Steve made no bones about saying that he didn't like the structure, he didn't like the negotiations. In 2 weeks, how much heavy lifting did that have to get that down to a place that you were comfortable with? Was that a lot of coming down on their side, or did you feel like it was more coming together thing?
I think it's coming together, and it's both sides sincerely working towards an objective. I think what Steve said was very authentic, and it's the way he felt. And, you know, at times during negotiations, you're going to have disagreements. And we were at a point in the negotiation where there's a pretty significant disagreement about what we were looking at. And Steve expressed that. But we kept working at it, and they kept working at it, and ultimately we got to a good spot.
Those public comments at Amazing Day, I think, were beneficial. And I'm just speculating here because Scott Boras, probably the entire time, knew he was bringing Pete Alonso back to the Mets. He probably knew Pete didn't want to go to Toronto. He didn't want to go anywhere else. And he wasn't getting like major offers elsewhere either, because I think Pete always had more value to the Mets than any other team. So I think Scott probably in his mind knew, hey, final objective here is I'm getting him back to the Mets. When Steve Cohen goes out in a public forum in front of fans and says, hey, I'm frustrated by the whole process, you could ignore what Scott Boras countered with. Maybe there was a part of Scott that said, I better move a little bit because I don't want to blow this. Because if I lose the Mets, where the Mets really close the door, where's my client going? Am I sending him to Toronto for less money than even what the Mets offered? So I love the honesty of Steve Cohen. We said that at the time. But I also think it worked as a positive strategy in this whole negotiation.
I just want to say one thing, too. Listening to David Stern's talk, he is a manipulator in what he wants to get across. Like, he's made every, like, we could sit there and say whether we think that David Stern's really wanted him back or not. I could debate that with you, whatever it is. He's saying everything the right way. That if Pete Alonso hears any of this, if any of this team hears any of this, they're going to be like, David really wanted me here.
Yeah. Well, I think he realizes he's got to be careful. I mean, you don't want the room hating you. You know, I know Brian Cashman doesn't care about that, but if you're David Stearns, yeah, you want to be honest as you can be, but you also want people eating out of your hands. So I think he's got to be careful with this Pete stuff. Cause the Mets won the negotiation, but you don't want to spike the football in his face. You want Pete Alonso feeling like, hey, I won too, and I'm excited to go to camp and kick some ass.
Dave, I think about 2 weeks before it got done, you guys were at Amazing Day at the Fan Fest, and Steve made no bones about saying that he didn't like Steve.
Sorry,
I guess still relatively new comparatively since he bought the team at doing what he does. You've been a long time in this baseball game. Was that weird to see your owner say that in like a public setting like that? Or
no, I look, Steve wants to be transparent. Not every owner does. And so there are clearly rules that govern what we can say. And so I think what Steve did was be as transparent as he possibly could without breaking any rules. And I applaud him for doing it and appreciate him doing that.
Yeah, I applaud it too. I think it was great, especially looking at it now since it helped get the whole thing done.
Hey Dave, how was that for you to work with an owner that from our perspective seems to be very active in negotiations and wants to be at the negotiating table? Is that something that you had to deal with in Milwaukee, for example, and just how does that work for someone like you?
I think Steve is very invested in ensuring that players know that we want them, and is very invested in having a personal relationship with a player. And that's what he expresses in these negotiations. I think that's why it is important for him to meet with players, like we met with Juan Soto, going down and talking to Steve, to Pete. I think just accentuates the personal touch that he and Alex want to place on the team, want to place on the organization. And from my perspective, that's an enormous benefit for the organization.
The money is the most important, but that familiar touch that Steve Cohen adds and his wife adds, there's no negative to it. And if it helped seal the deal when they already offered a lot of money to Juan Soto, great. If it helped seal the deal with Pete Alonso and they offered a lot of money anyway, great. That personal touch so far has been a positive as the Mets have chased other free agents, and in the case of Pete, their own free agent.
Just on a kind of a side note, Mark mentioned today that he's going to continue taking reps at first. Do you guys envision Pete playing 162 over at first base like he did last year, or do you want to see some guys kind of share the load over there?
Look, I don't know that we ever go into a season expecting a player to play 162. That is really tough to do. I imagine Pete is going to do everything in his power to play 162, but we also have to be prepared for what happens and the randomness that happens over the course of a major league season.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, Vientos working out at first base is he's the backup first baseman. I mean, Pete Alonso is going to try to play 162. David Stern said that perfectly. There's a chance that he's not. I know he has this incredible track record throughout his major league career of not missing games. It's actually uncanny how few games Pete Alonso's missed. He played 161 his rookie year. He played 57 of 60 in 2020. He played 152 of 162 in 21, 160 in 22, 154 in 23, and then last year played 162. He doesn't miss games, but you got to protect yourself. So clearly Mark Vientos working out at first base isn't that the Mets are going to, you know, force Pete to sit. It's more, hey, they got to have a backup plan in case Pete gets hurt, which I know he really hasn't throughout his major league career, but you never know. You always got to protect yourself.
Pete's had a couple relatively strange seasons, like by, you know, for him at least. One year, his batting average was down. Last year, home runs were down a little bit, but his batting average was back up. What do you make of his last two seasons, and what leads you to believe that he can get back on sort of a more normal track for him these next few?
He's a really motivated player right now. He's a very motivated player to have an elite Pete Alonso season. And I expect we're going to see that. I think he's very confident in his abilities, and I'm excited to watch it.
A very, very motivated Pete Alonso. Tell me more, David Stearns. Tell me more.
if he played under the pressures of a walk year last year as well, you're placing him right back in that situation, essentially. What makes you comfortable doing that with him?
Look, I don't personally think, and we can ask him, I personally don't think the walk year impacted him. I mean, I never got the sense that contractual pressures were impacting him last year. Certainly this is a player who has repeatedly proven in big moments he can play under pressure. He's played in New York his entire career and handled the pressure. So that frankly for me is not of concern at all.
It's an assumption, and it's done all the time. When a guy is in a contract year and he has a great year, has a career year, we will just say, oh, he was motivated. It was a contract year. Be skeptical in free agency. That was a contract year. If a guy struggles in a contract year, and Pete did not have his best season, in fact, statistically, it was one of his worst seasons, it's easy to just say, oh, it's because he was under pressure. It's just a made-up narrative. It doesn't mean it's true. And I give you an example, I think a pretty good example, to kind of illustrate my point. There is a fellow by the name of Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger obviously is on the New York Yankees right now, but Cody Bellinger won an MVP, and then he just fell off the rooftop. And in his free agent season with the LA Dodgers, he hit .210 with a .654 OPS. I guess the pressure got to him. He signs a one-year deal with the Cubs and has the best season he had had since his MVP season. It's .307, drives in 97 runs, has an .881 OPS, like literally the best season he'd had in 4 years, contract year. So he must have been motivated by the contract. And then last year, where it could have been a contract year because he had an opt-out, his numbers go back down. Not quite as bad as it was in 22, but they go down. So think about this. Cody Bellinger, in 3 years, all of them contract years, had a .650 OPS. Pressure's getting him. An .880 OPS. Ah, he's motivated. Back down to a .750. Baseball has randomness to it, like David Stern said. And so what we need to do is stop assuming things like he only had a good year because it's a contract year, or in the case of Pete, he only had a bad year because it was a contract year. We talked about this a few weeks ago of he can't handle the pressure, which I reject, because he then hit one of the biggest home runs in the history of the franchise and had a big postseason. So how can you tell me he can't handle the pressure when, with his Met career on the line, he hit the biggest home run in the franchise's history? So I happen to agree with David Stearns. I think we as fans, and sometimes in the media, we just make assumptions. It's just like, oh, he can't handle the pressure. And when you ask Pete Alonso that question, there's no way he's going to say, oh, yeah, the pressure got to me. He's not going to say that. And if Pete has a great year this year, doesn't that defeat the whole narrative that he struggled under the pressure last year? The whole thing makes me laugh.
Why is, in your words, Pete Alonso so motivated to have an elite Pete Alonso year?
Look, I think he wants to win. I mean, I think what he expressed to us is he wants to win a World Series as a Met. And he knows a big part of our ability to do that is him producing. I think Pete's had good years the last couple of years, but not as good, not as elite, not at the standard that he set at the front end of his career. Mm-hmm. And I think he is very motivated to demonstrate that he is capable of putting up those types of numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to, you know, the contract. I think that he looks at the offers he got this offseason and says, are you effing kidding me? I'm better than that. He's talking about himself. You know, it's easy for us to sit here and say he had a bad year. He didn't have a great year. But I don't know if Pete Alonso necessarily views it that way. He probably looks at the offseason and says, I got disrespected. I'm motivated to prove everybody wrong. And sure, the winning too. I mean, the Mets came close last year. Think about it. This guy's been with this franchise since 2019. Before that, in the minor leagues, they were two wins away from getting to a World Series. He tasted partying for the first real time as a Met. So I think both of those things certainly serve as big time motivation.
How did his social club compare to some of the other places you've closed deals?
We didn't actually close it there, but it was pretty impressive. It was pretty impressive. That was a unique meeting setting, and a cool spot.
He's talking about the big meeting down in Tampa where they met with Alonso. Didn't close the deal, but it certainly led to getting this thing done.
In response to the free agency ad, you mean?
No, not necessarily. I think...
Is he more motivated now than he was a year ago?
I don't think so. I mean, you can ask him that, but I think Pete's a pretty motivated player. And regardless of how this offseason played out for him, I think he was going to come into this year wanting to win a lot of games, wanting to win a World Series, and I think that's the player we're getting.
He put himself in a tough spot when he's like, he's really motivated this year. And it's like, well, was he not motivated last year? Nah, Pete Alonso's always motivated. All right.
What is this just in terms of, I know you guys have your internal projections of what the team is supposed to do. How do you feel like you are stacking up right now against the Phillies, against the Braves, against the top teams?
It's going to be really tight. I mean, this is a really good division. The Braves and the Phillies are two very good teams. We think we're a very good team. We got our work cut out for us. There's no question about that. This is a very, very good division. We got a ton of respect for those two teams. And we got to go out and perform at a really high level, to be right there with them.
Think about it. The Braves won 89 games last year and they were pretty beat up by injuries. So if they are healthy and they're going to start the season behind the eight ball, because Spencer Strider is not going to be ready right away. Ronald Acuna Jr. is not going to be ready right away, but they should be healthy at some point. It's funny. Last year, the Mets did a pretty good job against the Braves and the Phillies. They were 6-7 against Atlanta. They were 6-7 against the Phillies. I know that's not the greatest, but they're two really good teams, and they were basically a 500 team. In my estimation, this is the best division in baseball. I'm not saying that out of bias. I'm saying it because it's that damn good. The Phillies are incredibly talented. The Braves should be a lot better than they were last year. The Nationals, I think, are sneaky because they got so much young talent that's on the rise. But clearly, when you look at the top of this division, it's loaded.
Do you feel like you have the tools to be better than them?
I feel like we can be better with them, but there's nothing guaranteed. I mean, we got to go out and perform. The Braves are going to win more games than they won last year. The Phillies are a really good team that's going to be highly motivated again this year. So we know the battle we're about to enter. I think we're excited by it, but we know it's going to take a very strong effort from our entire roster.
He's right about Atlanta. I think I just said the same thing. They won 89 games last year. That feels like a mortal lock that they will win more than that.
For a long time, I think every team's goal at the start of spring training was to win their division. Given the expanded postseason, that winning the NL East has not proven beneficial to the last couple teams that did it. Is that still as big a primary goal as it used to be?
I think the first round bye is a big deal. And I know it hasn't always proven that way in this new playoff format. I think over time, we get into a 10, 15 year stretch of this and we will see that being a big deal. So I still think that's a big deal. The biggest deal is getting in. Like, you want to keep playing, regardless of how you do it, but being able to skip the first round is a big deal.
Of course. Like, no matter how often a team doesn't win the division, like the Mets last year, and then goes out, wins a round, and then beats a team that won a division, you could do that every year for the next 10 years, okay? I still want to win the division. I don't want to have to play a wild card series. It is risky business. Ask the Brewers. It's a risky, risky game. So as we go into this season, two things can be true at the same time. You don't have to win the division. Mets showed that last year. But you're better off winning the division. And then, after you win the division, getting a first-round bye. If you win the division, but you've got the third-best record in the league, then it's a waste of time. Great, you got the games at home. You still have to deal with that best of three, which is a major crapshoot. So, no matter how many times a team loses, like the Phillies did last year, I completely agree with David Stearns on this one. Winning the division matters. And I hope that we're sitting here in August debating that, because that means we're still in play to win the National League East. But that has to be the goal, because who wants to deal with a wild card series? Go right to the divisional series. Pass, go. Collect $200, all that.
And then in your second year, does this team, does this roster feel any more like a David Stearns team or a David Stearns organization than it did last year?
Look, I don't think we're ever going to get to like a point where it's a David Stearns team or a David Stearns organization. Like this is the compilation of a number of different people, a number of different regimes contributing to where we are right now. And look, I think we're going into the season with a pretty good team. We're also far from a perfect team. We're going to continue to work to get better. We're going to ask a lot of our players. We're going to challenge our players to get better. And just like every season, we're going to do our best to make upgrades where we can throughout the season.
A David Stearns team. He's right. It's never going to be David Stearns team because Francisco Lindor was acquired before David Stearns. He signed for another decade. Brandon Nimmo was drafted before David Stearns, re-signed before David Stearns. So the organization is different. The philosophies are different. He's obviously bringing in a lot of his own guys, but he's kind of right. Like, I don't know if it's ever going to be a fully David Stearns team.
How close, if at all, were you to bringing back Iglesias this winter? And it seems at this point that maybe you've moved on. What's going on? What's going into that decision?
Yeah, I think where we are now for that role on our team, it's important for us to keep some avenues open for some of our younger players. We think it's important for us to have some roster flexibility with that spot. It's really tough to freeze your entire position player roster. We did that for a portion last year, and we actually kind of got away with it, but there very easily could have been a circumstance where we got stuck with a completely frozen position player roster. And so having some flexibility there in that role is frankly probably needed for us right now.
That is the headline that comes out of David Stearns. Basically, that is him saying it is over for Jose Iglesias. Before we factor in the OMG and the locker room stuff, what he's saying about a roster freeze is that if they sign Iglesias tomorrow, it'd be a major league deal. He's not signing another minor league deal. Their roster would be set with no options to change it, like barring injury. Your infielders would be Lindor, McNeil, Vientos, Alonso, Iglesias. Your outfielders would be Nimmo, Taylor, Siri, Soto, Marte, and Winker. Your catchers would be Alvarez and Torrens. That's it. That's 13 position players. And you're not going more than that because you're going to have 13 pitchers. So I think that's what he means by the roster. And he is also right that there are a lot of guys in the minor leagues, though, not necessarily ready, who can play shortstop, second base, and third base. So if Iglesias is re-signed, you're blocking them. Now, can Jose Iglesias still be a New York Met? Well, I mean, if they get ravaged by injuries, sure. So it's never over until he signs with another team. But I think you look at the roster and you see why they don't necessarily need him. Now, how important is OMG? I don't know if you guys got a chance to see that Met yearbook. I was honored to be a part of it. That was a lot of fun. Obviously, he played a big role in last year and everything about it. He was part of that magic. They were the OMG Mets. Like, I think when we look back at the Mets many years from now and we define 2024, we're going to call him the OMG Mets. And that comes from Jose Iglesias. He will always have a special part of Met history. But in 2025, was that magic, that aspect of it, was that going to continue? Or do we just have to look at him as a baseball player? And it's a 35-year-old who had a career season. Or do we really think that OMG had to come back for 2025? That's where I'm mixed, because as a baseball player, I think they can move on. But that magic usually doesn't strike twice. And I hope that this locker room is strong enough now that they're not going to need Candelita as a pop star to keep the room together. And you look back, I remember when the offseason started, we went through the free agents that the Mets had. And we were power ranking the importance. They brought back Manaea. They brought back Pete. They even brought back Winker, who gave you some vibes late in the season. So it's disappointing, but it makes a ton of sense.
Dave, how has your teamwork with Steve been so far? I mean, he brings a certain element to it. You bring a certain element to it. It seems like you guys work together pretty well in figuring out what would be a good deal for Pete Alonso. Do you think you guys have done a pretty good job complimenting each other in the past year plus that you've been?
Yeah, I've enjoyed working for Steve. I mean, he's been a tremendously supportive owner. He cares deeply about winning. He cares deeply about this organization. When you're sitting in my job, that's all you could ask for. He's providing us every resource we could need to put a consistently very high caliber team on the field.
Stearns and Cohen, they've been a hell of a tag team.
What kind of down roster implications does the move of bringing Pete back kind of for some of the younger guys kind of closing up a hole? What does that kind of impact have on the roster as a whole?
Sure. Look, it's a spot that is now guaranteed to go to one player. And so there's a little bit less, there's one fewer open spots on the roster. And so that is going to impact some of our young players. They understand it. We've talked to them about it. It creates probably a little bit more competition here in camp. We also know, and I talk about it every year, the roster on opening day is a roster for one day. We're going to go through 60 plus players, and we're going to need all of them to contribute over the course of a season. And so I would imagine all of these young players that are in the mix for this final spot or two on the roster, you know, are going to impact our team in a material way over the course of the year, even if it's not on opening day.
There will certainly be a lot of roster changes. The guy that's affected the most is Brett Baty. I don't think it's even close. Brett Baty went from being a guy who is going to get a chance to play every day to a guy who realistically may start the year in the minor leagues. So not even close. Biggest impact from the Alonso signing is how it affects Brett Baty.
How do you the internal projections for the 2025 Mets right now compared to what your internal projections were a year ago?
I'm not going to comment on our internal projections or what we're looking at. I'll say I think we're a pretty good team. I like where we are as a team, and I'm looking forward to watching us play.
How do you feel about the team?
Don't ask him about his internal projections.
Do you like it better on paper? Not as much, about the same?
I'll speak as an organization. I like where we are as an organization today. I think we've taken steps forward as an organization in the entirety, and that's inclusive of where our major league team is at. Where that ultimately ends up 7-8 months from now, really tough for me to predict, but I like where our organization is. I like where our major league team is. I'm excited for camp and really excited to just get this going and watch baseball.
Me too. I think we're all excited for that.
Sort of jumping off there, where do you think the organization has made strides and where would you like to see it continue to make strides?
Yeah, I'd like to think we've made strides across the board in our operation. I'm very pleased with where we are from a player development standpoint, some of the processes we've implemented there, some of the people we've brought in have been very happy with our amateur scouting work over the past year. I think we had a really quality draft last year. And that's something that's going to become continuously important, but also continuously difficult as we pick farther and farther down. And where our payroll is and is likely to continue to be, we're losing 10 spots, every year in the draft. And so, finding good major league players farther down the draft becomes very important for us. So, I think we also recognize the work is never done. And there are 29 other really smart clubs competing every single day to try to get better as well. But I'm excited about where we are. I like the group we have in the front office, and looking forward to continuing to work with them.
We forget about that sometimes. We love that they spend money and no regrets, but they get affected in terms of where they pick in the draft. We'll get a better idea of how well David Stearns has built this front office in terms of developing prospects in like a couple of years. Because remember, a lot of these top prospects that we're talking about came from the prior administration.
You guys obviously took some big swings, landed some big players in the winter, but there may be an outside perception that you guys didn't do a whole lot when it came to the starting rotation. How do you view the starting staff right now? Just what are your overall thoughts on the depth coming into spring training?
Yeah, I will say I feel much better about our starting pitching depth sitting here today than I did a year ago. We made that a priority of our offseason. We brought in a number of players at all levels of free agency. I think we're at least coming into camp in a pretty good health spot. Doesn't mean we're going to stay healthy throughout the entire season. We know that doesn't happen, but we're coming into camp in a pretty good health spot. And so I feel good about our starting pitching depth.
Yeah. The starting pitching depth is fine. I think the concern is, do you have reliability? Do you have a top of the rotation arm? You know, and you're also relying on a couple of guys, specifically Kodai Senga, who didn't pitch last year. And you're also relying on another guy in David Peterson, who finally put it all together in the second half of last year, but he's not a proven commodity. So I like their pitching depth too, but I don't think that's the concern Met fans have about the pitching. It's more how good are some of these guys.
David, with the announcement that you guys are bringing Drew back as well today, you've got a few pitchers that had Tommy John surgery mid-season last year. The typical timetable would basically rule them out for this season as well, but with the advancements in some of the surgical techniques, the braces, are there more avenues for those guys to be considered potential options this year?
Look, I think with Drew, potentially in September, we don't want to rush this. Like, we got to get it right. Have a better feel for that as we get into the summer months. So, I think that's possible, although we're not going to count on that. Mm-hmm. With Christian Scott, our plan is he's not going to pitch in competition this year. So we'll use this year to make sure we get him right, and then have him full go in 26.
Alzolay,
unlikely. Yeah, unlikely this year. That's more of 26.
That's all you need to know. Drew Smith, we'll stick with them at first, because I think Christian Scott we knew was out for the year, so that's a guy to think about in 26. Drew Smith and Admert Alzolay are stashes. You know, in the NBA, they call it the Euro stash. When you draft a guy from Europe, you're stashing him for a year. The Mets have reliever stash. That's what they have. They've got two relievers in Drew Smith and Admert Alzolay, who can be a part of the team in 2026. But I would not count on Drew Smith in September, nor would I want to count on Drew Smith in September. So I think that explains their thoughts on the Alzolay signing and even bringing Drew Smith back. That is about 2026.
With Drew back, what's the value of just keeping him with the organization? You know, obviously this year being kind of a full rehab for him.
Yeah, he's been a long tenured Met who's given a lot to the organization, is a good teammate, is a good pitcher. And so I think having continuity in his care, that he can be under our supervision for his rehab in a place that he's comfortable, where he trusts the medical staff, is important for both sides. And then hopefully this goes well and he's pitching big innings for us in 26.
Drew Smith pitched for the New York Mets in 2018. That's kind of weird to think about. Drew Smith was a contributing solid reliever before Pete Alonso made his major league debut. And that's, you almost forget that. And you know what else you forget? When the Mets decided to non-tender Drew Smith, Pete Hoffman was celebrating. Now that they've brought him back on this contract, you almost forgot that Drew Smith existed, because your response is, whatever. Like, it didn't even faze you when they brought him back.
Yeah, well, because you want to know why. It's not going to affect this year at all. So I have at least 1 year of no pressure coming from Drew Smith. Like, I'm not going to be sweating bullets when he comes in and screws up a game.
Fair enough. So it's like, I'm not worrying about it. In 2026, when we're doing Rico's getting ready for next year, that's when Hoff will begin to worry.
That's right. By the way, here's the final five from David Stern.
All right, final five. David Stearns.
You mentioned earlier the whole luxury tax, losing 10 spots in the draft thing. Payroll-wise, you guys ended up in the low going on mid-300s, I believe, by the public estimations. Steve has said he doesn't want to go there every year.
Yeah.
How did where you guys have ended up now compared to sort of the early off-season conversations you guys had about options you had?
Yeah, I think going into any offseason, there are always different scenarios. So depending on who you're able to sign, who you're able to access, sort of dictates what level of payroll you're ultimately going to have. So this was certainly a scenario that we discussed. And there were other scenarios with lower payroll numbers that we discussed as well. You're right. You know, I don't think as an organization we want to remain consistently this high. But in this offseason, given the opportunities that were in front of us, we had tremendous ownership support to get there. And I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, if they don't bring back Pete Alonso, it's a lower payroll. Or if AJ Minter decides he doesn't want to come to New York, it may be a lower payroll. But I'm glad it's where it's at.
Are there any scenarios with a higher number?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, we plot out everything and anything. You know, in this case, this was probably among the higher of the scenarios we plotted out. And I think the general path that this offseason took is one that makes sense for the organization at this time.
Projecting his scenario where they had a high payroll, let's go back to when they signed Ryan Stanek. They were also talking to Kenley Jansen. And I think it's clear by what's happening in Anaheim, the Angels are giving Kenley Jansen the closer's role, despite they have a young flamethrower who throws 104 miles an hour in Ben Joyce. They said to Kenley Jansen, okay, we'll let you close. The Mets were never going to do that. That's why I never took Kenley Jansen serious as an option. But let's just say Kenley Jansen was like, screw it. I really want to win. I want to stick it to the Dodgers, my former team. I'm going to sign with the Mets. Do we really think that would have kept them from Pete Alonso? So I think when he talks about projecting a higher payroll, they were going after Kenley Jansen. And I know when they signed Stanek, the reaction was, ooh, that's evidence that they're going to keep Pete. When the reality is, if they got Tanner Scott or they got Kenley Jansen, they may have kept Pete anyway. Because to David Stearns' point, he makes them better. And they had possibilities where the payroll was going to be even higher. Look at Dylan Cease. What if they trade for Dylan Cease tomorrow? And they actually aren't giving back a lot of money in contracts. Then the payroll moves even higher. So, yeah, those scenarios make sense. It didn't happen. They still could happen, technically, in the case of Cease. But that's how it would have happened.
What do you think of what the Dodgers have done, not only in total payroll, but in one case, in Sasaki's case, luring in a guy who doesn't cost very much at all?
I think they've done a really good job. I mean, look, that's an organization that has had tremendous continuity now for over a decade. I think on all sides of their operation, they're run very well. They've had consistent success. And so that's great. You know, that's great competition for us. They're a good organization, good team. And we're looking forward to competing against them.
Ugh. Well, we got to compliment the Dodgers, David. I mean, stop being so damn classy. You don't have to compliment the Dodgers, as great as they are.
I know you guys went for Yamamoto the previous offseason, but what do you think about the perception that you probably like less the really long-term deals for even the star free agent pitchers? Because it didn't seem like there were three of them out there or more. And
I understand that perception is out there. It's always individual. Like we're always evaluating the individual and trying to understand what makes sense for the organization. We have approached starting pitchers on long-term deals. Clearly not at values that secured them for us, but we don't have lines in the sand. We don't have hard and fast rules. I think we have philosophies. I think we try to do our best to be informed about sort of what the evidence is suggesting for us. But we're not drawing a line in the sand. And when there are players of any position that we think are worth the long-term investment in the construct of all the other investments we have with our club, we'll pursue them.
I'll believe it when I see it. You know, I'll believe it when I see David Stearns pursue a starting pitcher on a long-term contract who's in his 30s, which is basically everybody. I mean, Yamamoto was a specifically special case because of the fact that he was coming over from Japan and he was such a young age. But even Dylan Cease, who's now the apple of every Met fan's eyes, he's going to be 30 next year. Framber Valdez, who's a free agent, has been very reliable over the last few years, is going to be 33. So I know he's saying we take it on a case-by-case basis. I'd be curious to see the case where they are, and he is willing to go long-term on a starting pitcher that's in his 30s. I don't know if we're ever going to see that.
I think based on the two teams' resources and the way people look at it on the outside, that you guys are in a sort of like arms race with the Dodgers. You compete for a lot of the same players. You have a lot of money. Do you guys look across the country and see what the Dodgers are doing? Or do you guys try to focus more on your own division, the rivals? Like, how do you guys look at that sort of thing?
Both. We're not ignoring the Dodgers. I mean, we understand who they are in our game right now. And the success they've had, and that's great. But our primary focus needs to be on ourselves and how can we put the best team forward possible? How can we continue to improve organizationally in all aspects to have the type of continuity and sustained success that the Dodgers and some other organizations in our league have had? I think we're on the path to doing that.
I'll say it. The Los Angeles Dodgers are irrelevant right now. And the reason I say that is you got to make the playoffs. The Mets play the Dodgers 6 times this season. That's it. They play the Chicago Cubs 6 times this season. So the Dodgers are just one of 29 other teams that the Mets are going to face. You hope you beat them, but they are what they are. They're regular season games. They count the same as when you play the Colorado Rockies. If you qualify for the postseason, there's a chance you see the Dodgers. There's a chance you don't. We know full well as Met fans, they didn't have to even go through the Atlanta Braves in 2000. So, yeah, the Dodgers are the team to beat. They are. There's nothing the Mets can do that will change the fact that the LA Dodgers on paper are the team to beat. But they can easily lose a division series to the San Diego Padres or the Atlanta Braves or whomever. So I get it. At the end of this rainbow, maybe we do get a rematch with the Los Angeles Dodgers, whether it's in a divisional series or a league championship series. But they don't mean a damn thing until you're staring at them in a best of 5 or a best of 7. I think sometimes we obsess too much with the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Phillies, the Braves, very different. You play them 13 times, and you compete with them to win a division. The Mets go win 95 games. That's a great year. If the Braves win 96, we're a wild card team. So the Dodgers are like the boogeyman. But the reality is they don't matter until, and I hope it happens because it means we're in the postseason, until you play them in a postseason series.
And that is a wrap on the first press conference of many for Mr. David Stearns.
Wonderful job, David Stearns, and wonderful job, Pete Hoffman. Did a great job editing all those clips, giving us an opportunity to respond. And for anyone out there to hear from David Stearns at his Welcome to Spring Training press conference. Coming up in the next couple of days on the Rico Bronio, we will officially, Hoff and I did this last year, we'll do it again, we will officially project the 26-man roster. It's not that complicated, but the injuries are the tough ones to guess. And I've started to, in my brain, incorporate potential injuries. So we'll project the 26-man roster, and we will also look very closely at if this team is better. Are the 2025 New York Mets better than the 2024 New York Mets? What are they going to have to do? What are they going to have to get out of certain position groups to match or be better than the team from a year ago that won 89 games and advanced to the National League Championship Series. We appreciate you hanging out with us, listening to us. Of course, you can download the Rico Bronya wherever you download your podcasts. You can watch us on YouTube. However you consume the Rico, we appreciate it. Thank you very much for downloading, subscribing, and listening to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Legacies shape who we are, but who's shaping them? In the new season of Black History Year, we're breaking down the meaning and power behind the personal, familial, and systemic legacies that define our world. We're diving deep into how political and cultural forces have historically molded Black communities and what it means for our future. Join us on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts for a new season of Black History Year. Let's shape our collective memory and legacy together.